From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour goes back to the mid-1990s. A Broadway star was becoming a Hollywood star. Sheryl Lee Ralph found fame in 1982 for her role as Dina Jones in Dreamgirls. She built that success into a music career, then a television and a film career, from a role in Designing Women to Robert De Niro's Mistress on screen. Ralph then headlined in TV's Moesha, but it wasn't always easy. Sheryl Lee Ralph says she found that her race, her gender, and her age could all be used against her. So using some advice from Robert De Niro, she changed her attitude, and she's now offering that advice to everyone. At the same time, Sheryl Lee Ralph was working on Moesha. A young woman in Rochester was working on her own success. Melanie Silas was born and raised in Rochester, and despite some challenges of her own, Silas has built a wide-ranging career, from teaching at MCC to creating her own production company and performing on stage. Silas has refused to let barriers stop her. On Friday, Silas has helped create an event with the theme of empowerment. We're going to hear from Sheryl Lee Ralph, who's going to be headlining, and we're happy to have Melanie Silas in studio. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You're not nervous this hour, are you?
I'm always nervous.
I'm so excited that you're so nervous. You know why? Because you're going to laugh and we're going to have such a fun hour talking. Because we're talking about some important things here. You are, you're an MCC professor, but you do so much, and we're going to be talking about this.
Okay.
But you created an event, you helped create an event on Friday. What's going on Friday?
On Friday, we have an evening of diversity and empowerment with our keynote, as you said, Sheryl Lee Ralph. And we have had an opportunity to partner in some ways with the University of Rochester Alumni Center. Actually have a diversity conference going on that Friday, and then on that evening we will have the evening of diversity event. And on that night we will not only be hearing from Sheryl, but we will have the awesome opportunity to highlight and award some empowerment awards to a few agencies within the community that have done a phenomenal and superb job with empowering our youth over the years.
Okay. When you talk about diversity in general and empowerment, mm-hmm. how do you define those terms?
Diversity really kind of has a wide, spectrum. You know, I think that sometimes we limit it to thinking of just like race, class, or gender,
right.
But there are other things like socioeconomic status. There is, social status, married, single, kids, things of that nature, ability, disability, religion, things of that nature. And so when we think about diversity, we really want people to kind of broaden their horizons, broaden their lens or their perspective, so to speak, and start thinking about things that can become barriers for, all of us, because I think that all of us have certain traits or characteristics or attributes that can bring so much breadth and depth,
mm-hmm.
But because sometimes we can be sometimes very closed-minded in how we, interact with one another, that it limits the way that we can really honor and celebrate one another and do bigger things, even as a community.
Empowerment.
Empowerment.
What do you mean by that?
Empowerment is my thing. I believe in empowerment. I think that we all have the ability to empower ourselves, but I think that we also have a responsibility to empower others. Too much is given, much is also required. And a part of that stewardship is about being community, about lifting someone up, about propelling other people up, about saying that you can make it, because all of us have had a time in our lives where we hit a rock or hit a barrier, hit a wall, a ceiling or some sort, and we just needed somebody to say that we could make it, And so I think that when we talk about empowerment, we not only talk about individual empowerment, but we talk about being our brothers and sisters keepers at all times.
Melanie Silas is in studio with us, and I don't know, Melanie, how do I introduce you, by the way? I said MCC professor, started your own production company, performer. What's Melanie Silas?
I am just me. Those particular roles that I have, those are blessings for me. Are just the gifts and talents that I've kind of tapped into.
I didn't even cover it all. There's more. that resume is outrageous. It looks like amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I don't know. I am an associate professor at MCC. That is, teaching is my first love, always has been. I've been teaching for about 20 years now, actually. And I've been at MCC for 11 of those 20. So a little bit more than half.
20 years you've been at MCC?
No, 20 years I've been teaching. I've been at MCC for 11.
Okay, I was going to say, you do look like you could be a student at MCC. But the truth is, you're close to a big round number at some time soon, aren't you?
Well, I just had a birthday, but I won't say on air
okay.
how old I turned.
Okay. Is there a four in front of it?
Well, I won't say. You know, maybe not.
This is what I love about Melanie. She's positive energy. She also has a very compelling personal backstory, and we're going to be getting into that because on Friday, when you have these events about mm-hmm. empowerment, Melanie's own personal story, I think, is a testament to having strength around you, but also having determination on your own.
Absolutely.
And being willing to go out and grab something and go after it. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be talking about that, but we're also going to be talking about making sure people who need help have access. So
Absolutely.
There's a lot of complex issues in play. If people want to attend Friday events, what do they do, Melanie?
If they want to attend Friday's event, they can either do one of two things. They can go to any Wegmans and purchase their ticket, general admission tickets, or they can go to www.mjsproductions.org, O-R-G, and they can purchase their ticket online.
When you think of Cheryl Lee Ralph,
yes.
what do you think of first?
Powerhouse. She is a dynamo. Her energy, her passion, her focus, her life story, what she's doing now, the things that she has promoted within her own foundation. She and I both have a similar cause that we, you know, champion, and that's around HIV/AIDS. Working to fight against the disease, but also fighting to have access to services and to bring down the numbers within the African American community.
When you think of her performing, what do you think of first?
Wow.
Because
it's probably that. Wow.
Our listeners, by the way, you may know Cheryl Lee Ralph very well, and they may not know her that well.
Absolutely.
So what do you think of first?
So when I think of Cheryl Lee Ralph, I think of a particular, I think about Moesha because she was the mom of Moesha, but she is also a phenomenal actress. I mean, she's still acting, you know, after all of these years. She is a phenomenal philanthropist, if I can say that word correctly.
Yep.
but she is, she's a go-getter. She's a powerhouse. She is an empowerer. She is inspiring. And she continues to even aspire in her own right, you know. So even though she's had all of these phenomenal successes, award-winning actress, she still, you know, aspires to be more, to do more, to show more, to grow more.
Yeah.
And I think that we all should.
I had a chance to talk to Cheryl Lee Ralph on Friday,
mm-hmm.
and she's going to be here this coming Friday.
Yes.
But before we get to the full interview, I'd love to play a short clip of her because she was in Dreamgirls, 1982, and one of her biggest fans was Rosie O'Donnell. Now, back in 96, and this is when Cheryl Lee Ralph was in Moesha fame,
mm-hmm.
Rosie had her on the show and asked her, will you please perform for me? Because she loves Dreamgirls.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a clip going back to 1996, so if you don't know who Cheryl Lee Ralph is, this is a good little clip to introduce you. Let's listen. That's Rosie jumped up behind her and she was doing the motions with her and she's singing with her because she loves her. So that take you back a little to right there, Melanie?
Well, that was awesome. I mean, I love to see or hear Cheryl perform it at all times. That was awesome. And I love I started smiling really big when I heard Rosie like jumping up and down.
You,
and, you know, the energy was, you know, is inspiring all the way around. It was awesome.
Well,
was
she good. Still has the same energy. She's going to be here on Friday for this event. So let's listen to this interview I did with Cheryl Lee Ralph on Friday. And then we're going to come out and talk about some of the themes about empowerment, overcoming barriers, and all of those things. This is Shirley Ruff.
I plan to talk about the idea that you want to know what, if you want to be able to open and love anybody else, the first person you've really got to be open to and love is yourself. And if you're able to do that with that person, wow, we are halfway there.
And we're also talking about your own career here, and you've had a really remarkable career. When you go down the list of what you have done, what you've created, films you've been in, and some of the places you've been here, you know, there is this idea that Hollywood doesn't reward diversity and struggles to present roles for people of diversity. What have you experienced?
You know, it's very interesting. First of all, I let people know that diversity is about so much more than we sometimes think it is. You know, diversity is not just about black, white, red, and yellow. It's not just about young and old. It's not just about those who are physically fit and those who might have some sort of disability, or as others might wrongfully say, a handicap of sorts. The only word that handicap really works with is when you're talking about golf. But when you put all of those things together and add gender on it, all of that is diversity. And when you look in terms of, say, just what is offered to people of color in the realm of diversity in Hollywood, well, no matter what anybody thinks, yes, Hollywood has been very, very short on that. And they really need to catch up to the fact of the browning, the darkening, the diversity of culture that is America, and how more and more of those cultures want to see themselves reflected within their entertainment.
Look down your bio, and you've done so much in Hollywood. You're in The Mighty Quinn with Denzel Washington, Mistress with Robert De Niro, To Sleep with Anger with Danny Glover, and The Distinguished Gentleman with Eddie Murphy, among others. Plenty of work on television on It's a Living, Designing Women, The District, Moesha. You know, you've done so well for yourself. How have you been able to do it?
I've just been very, very fortunate. You know, and there's another thing that I'll talk about in the fact that I had great mentors as I entered this business, as I entered the industry. I really had people that looked out for me. There were people that were always, you know, open to sharing with me their showbiz war stories, giving me advice, giving me the heads up. You know, the fact that actresses before me, you know, stood up for me. You know, Robert De Niro told me, you know, you'd have to climb that mountain and wave the red flag and let them know that you are here. Because, you know, he said to me quite clearly, he said, Hollywood's not looking for you. You've got to let them know that you are here. And I was always so very thankful because of that. I also understood that before, you know, we had Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and all of that, you know, you had to be able to use the media to always stay relevant, to let people know that you had a name and to get them to know your name. So I was very, very well-trained in using that, and that's what's led me to having, you know, two series on the air right now, Instant Mom, Sundays at 8:30 on Nickelodeon, and the second series of Ray Donovan, where I play Claudette to John Voight on Showtime. So I'm very, very thankful to God to, you know, at this stage in my life, to be able to be on two series. It's great. I'm very happy. I'm very happy and very, very thankful.
Well, and you say at this point in your life, yeah, at least we look at John Voight and we know that Hollywood will not discriminate on age. I mean, John's 138 years old, I think. And look at him. He is doing amazing work. It seems like he's better with age.
I think that it's just wonderful that now as you enter into your 40s, your 50s, in your 70s, that with the aging of the baby boomers and the fact that so many of them are still in the industry, that it's like I said earlier, you know, if you're in the game, then you start, you know, understanding that, oh, I'm part of this picture, so I've got to be open to others and getting others to understanding that if you grow older, then that's a wonderful thing, especially if you've got energy. So I love it, the fact that ageism is being seen more and people are talking about it more and people are realizing that aging is happening to more people in America, and that's part of diversity as well. You know, people are talking about how people, you know, either stay in the game or don't stay in the game. You know, a lot of people are choosing to retire at 50, and some know they can't retire at 50 because they're probably going to live another 50 years, you know. So it's very interesting that the whole diversity issue is becoming a very serious one that people have to pay attention to because things are changing.
I love the story that you shared from Robert De Niro. I wonder, working alongside Denzel Washington, if you talked to him about diversity issues in Hollywood.
You know, if you ever read my book, Redefining Diva, there's a chapter in it where I talk about Denzel and the fact that, you know, we used to all work together on a community youth project, he, myself, and his wife, Pauletta. And one time we went into a very challenged neighborhood and, you know, we were coming in there for Christmas and we got out of the car and I was wearing the wrong color clothes, you know. And not so long ago, you couldn't wear red in certain neighborhoods and you couldn't wear blue in others because that could easily get you shot. Well, it was a holiday and I was wearing red. Well, it was not the color of that community. And the way Denzel, all that he was becoming as a young man, got out there and dealt with a very, very dicey situation, but brought his complete humanity to the situation and diffused it and just made it good for everybody.
That's beautiful.
You know, it was just a testament to who he was as a human being.
Yeah, and no surprise you hear stories like that. Well, outside of even the realm of Hollywood, I know you've talked to people, and you will in Rochester, just about dealing with diversity, say, in the workplace or in the business world, or, you know, if you encounter certain obstacles as you try to work your way up. Give me a sense for what some of those themes may be that we'll hear in Rochester outside of, you know, your career in show business. Are there applications for those of us in the business world?
There's one thing you have to think of before you start thinking about changing, improving, anything else. Are you working at a job that makes you absolutely happy? Do you get up in the morning and feel that I want to be the best I can possibly be? If you have answered yes to that, then that is great because then it's worth fighting for to change it and make it better. But if you're working at something and you're not happy, it's not worth it. So you need to get another job and work at making something else better. Because there are a lot of people that you can be around that don't just make you feel happy to go to your job. But if you feel happy and you know it can be better, then you start working on those things. As a woman, you will face different challenges because very often women work twice as hard for half the amount of money. For a person of color, you will very often be looked over just because of your color. For somebody who is working with a disability, whether you are bipolar or sitting in a wheelchair, there are some ways that other people who do not share your disability consider it not to be an ability, and they will overlook you. You could be somebody who is growing older, knows how to do the job, is not afraid of the internet, carries an iPad, and knows how to program your phone and your computer, and there are still some people that are going to judge you by the way you look and not by your abilities. But how best are you able to help them understand that you are the person for the job and help them be better by keeping you in the position or moving you up? These are not easy things to do. They are not easy battles to fight, but you've got to love what it is you're doing enough to fight for it.
Cheryl, you also were a big supporter and promoter of President Barack Obama, and there's a debate about whether he has done and who can define enough, but has the president done enough to advance the issue of equal opportunity for all? As somebody who supported the president from the beginning, are you satisfied with the work he's done on that issue?
Listen, in my view, he has done much more than a whole lot of presidents in the position that he is in. And since there has never been another one that has been in the position that he is in as being the first African-American, African descent president, he has done a great deal just being elected to a second term. If all he ever did for America was get us health care, health insurance, being able to fight for the best policy for ourselves, for all of us to have good insurance, that would be an incredible feat. And then, you know, very often, you know, people say, well, I don't think I need to register for insurance. And I say to myself, do you have insurance? And they say, no. I say, do you know the number one reason that causes people to have to file bankruptcy? No, it is an illness, a major illness, hospital bills. Do you think that has anybody in your family ever been really ill? Well, we have high blood pressure, or we have cholesterol, or there's heart disease, or somebody has cancer. Do you know how many people in America say that they know somebody with heart disease, high blood pressure, cancer? Way more than 50%. If looking at those numbers alone, why would you not want to have good health insurance? As a country, we need it. People who are sick are very expensive people. People who are sick and have no insurance can bring down an economy. So America needs to rephrase its conversation around health care, health insurance, and what's important, because we are a wonderful, beautiful people. We must be two things: smart and healthy. And if all President Barack Obama ever did was work for the health of the nation, he was doing much more than a lot of people were ever able to do. And that's how I feel on that.
Well, Cheryl, one more question before we see you in Rochester on Friday. In general, what needs to change in this country to make sure, whether it's Hollywood or Rochester, New York, or wherever it is, what needs to change to make sure people of color, as you say, never run into a problem in a work scenario just because of the color of their skin?
I tell everybody this. I don't care how educated you are. I believe the more education you have, the better you are able to fight all of the fights that you will come up against just because of the way people think you are or will be based upon the color of your skin. A more educated person is far more able to fight some of the battles in life. A lot of people have been educated for a long time, and there has been a dumbing down in America. And all of those, especially those who have extra fights to fight, must become more educated. That way you are better able to fight for yourself. You know where to get the information to fight the battle. When you can speak up and be heard in a way that people can understand you, wow, that is saying a lot. And a lot of us are not saying enough.
That is Cheryl Lee Ralph talking to us over the weekend. She's going to be here on Friday. She is an actress, an author, an entertainer, an activist. Melanie, did I cover most of it?
I think you got it.
Yeah, she's one of the original Dreamgirls, Moesha, a Hollywood actress, and has done very well for herself. And as you can hear, she's still acting, though she talked about it, Melanie. She's 57. I mean, she's 57 is youthful, right?
Well, I don't know exactly how old Cheryl is. I think that you're going to have to take that up with her.
She's 57, but that's 57 is youthful is what I'm saying. What I want to do is make sure our listeners understand that she's coming on Friday, and if you're just joining us, Melanie Silas, who teaches at MCC but also involved in many other issues in our community, has helped organize Cheryl's appearance at what? What's going on Friday?
On Friday, we will have an evening of diversity and empowerment with our keynote, Cheryl Lee Ralph, who will actually have a phenomenal program. Well, she will be the keynote, but we were also empowering or honoring organizations that have empowered youth with our Empowerment Award, and we will be honoring the STAR program, the Goodfellas program, Women's Foundation of Genesee Valley for their Voices of Experience program, the In Control program, the Delta Academy and Delta Gyms program, and then our Community Empowerment Award will be going to Trillium Health.
And Trillium is a name that we've heard for years talking mm-hmm. about AIDS and other issues. And
absolutely.
I know Cheryl's that big issue for her, big issue for you.
Absolutely. You know, I am a strong advocate for resources, for testing. We do testing every semester at the Damon City campus with Trillium as our partner. And we have a HIV AIDS fair where we have actual testing on site for the Latino AIDS Awareness Day and for the Black AIDS Awareness Day. And that usually happens in October and in February.
263-WXXI, 263-9994. We'd love to hear from you if you've run into issues of, or at least if you have experience or someone you know has experience dealing with issues where perhaps there were barriers because of your diversity or someone you know, and how you overcome that, or some of the issues you've run into. Shirley Ralph gave us a lot to think about there. First of all, I love the story that she told with Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro told her, Hollywood's not looking for you. You've got to make yourself be seen. And essentially he was saying, Hollywood isn't always looking for a black actress, a woman. You know, Hollywood's got a lot of roles that go to a lot of white men. That's what Robert De Niro was telling her. Mm-hmm. And she took that message to heart, mm-hmm. and she's carved out a great career for herself. What did you think when you heard that?
Well, I think that for anyone, I think that we all have to carve out our own niche. You know, I think one of the main things that she said that really struck me is that wherever you are, if you're not doing what you're passionate about doing, then number one, you really shouldn't be in that field. And because she was passionate about acting, she took on the responsibility to carve out a niche for herself, maybe to network with other people and to fight for, you know, fight against the injustices that she may have experienced herself or that she may have seen other people experience. But I think that even in my own life, you know, I am very thankful that I love my job. I love teaching. I love my students. I love being at MCC. And, you know, I don't think that there could be a day that I'm not teaching in some way, shape, or form, whether it's within the community or whether it's within the classroom. But if you're passionate about what you love, then you will find a way to kind of, you know, get around those barriers.
Yeah, going back over that interview, I wrote down those words. She said, got to find a job that makes you happy.
Yes.
But you know, Melanie, you grew up in Rochester.
I did.
You had friends who would probably tell you, at some point in your life, you got to find a job to find a job, even if it doesn't make you happy.
Yes.
It's not as easy as saying, well, I'm going to find something that I'm totally passionate about every day.
Right.
What's the message for people who say, right now, I need to work to work, mm-hmm. even if I don't love it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have to put food on the table and put clothes on, you know, your family's back. And I think that if you, you know, if you have to work, you have to work. We've all had to work at, you know, some point in time. But I say that while you're doing the job, you know, if you could do other things or find another position that really speaks to your heart, then it no longer becomes a job for you. You know, I have just been fortunate enough that throughout my career, my entire teaching career, that I was always teaching or counseling in some way, shape, or form. And that has been my background. From the very first time that I ever taught, I just actually shared this story out at Brockport for an education youth conference. The very first time I taught, I was 17. I went through a program called the Rochester AIDS Prevention Project for Youth. And so they taught us how to look at curriculum, how to write curriculum, how to teach curriculum in high school. In my senior year in high school, I actually taught elementary and middle school students about empowerment, self-esteem, HIV, AIDS, how to protect yourself, you know, just good health issues, you know, health practices. And so I've been doing that in some way, shape, or form ever since.
Shirley Ralph also talked about this idea of education. And no matter how educated you are, you can never be educated enough. You should never stop learning and never be afraid to promote yourself and to work hard to overcome those obstacles. And that message is so important to, especially, it could be women in the workplace, mm-hmm. who are unfairly treated. It could be kids in impoverished families who feel like they don't have a chance. That message is so important to them. I also wonder, though, you sit on the outside of that, you know? Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up with difficult circumstances. Mm-hmm. I grew up on third base. And it'd be easy for me to hear Shirley Ralph talking to people who've had it tough at times and say, yeah, do what Cheryl's does. Pull yourself up, you know, no excuses, it's all on you. And I know that's not necessarily Cheryl's total message. She's talking about, hey, get inside your heart and find it and work
right.
hard. But is there a risk that those of us who have never dealt with discrimination will say, Yeah. You know, do what she does. If you don't got a job, get a job. If you're in poverty, get out of poverty. Just snap your fingers. Is there a risk there?
Well, I think, you know, the whole pull yourself up by your own bootstrap kind of thing, you know, I really don't think that that's honestly a reality, because whether you started on first base, second base, or third base, you know, there was always somebody there who came before you.
Well, there's no question.
Who pushed you or pulled you or propelled you or put you in that position so that you can move forward. And so there is a dual responsibility. There has to be an internal drive that you're working from, but there is absolutely a need for the external resources and networks. And I think that when we talk about diversity, we have to talk about that, the idea of access. You know, will someone give me an opportunity? I started at MCC at 26. Somebody gave me an opportunity to show what I was capable of. And, you know, here I am 11 years later, you know, promoted twice over as an associate professor. And I do believe the youngest full time. Yeah.
We're going to talk about Melanie's personal story, which I think is an inspiring one in and of itself. We are late for a break. We're talking about empowerment, big event on Friday here in Rochester featuring Cheryl Lee Ralph. Melanie Silas is the woman behind it, the empowerer behind it. I know she loves that term. And we're going to come back and learn more about her own story, about how she's overcome some challenges. That's coming up next. I'm Evan Dawson. You're listening to Member Supported Public Radio. And welcome back on this Tuesday afternoon. Emily on Twitter tells us, Cheryl Lee Ralph, woman knows how to preach. What do you think, Melanie?
Always.
Did you know beforehand, before you brought her here, you probably knew how on fire she can get about
something. Oh, yeah. I've seen Cheryl at a few different conferences. She's actually a member of my sorority, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, the absolute best sorority that there is. And so I've seen Cheryl in action on several occasions. So I knew that she was the right person to bring for the event.
Melanie, you were born in Rochester.
Yes.
And grew up, who raised you?
Well, my grandparents raised me. I always say when I have to talk about this area of my life that I'm the first, the only, and the last child in my familial sphere. I am the only child of my mom and my dad, Anita and Dolphin. But I am the first of six for my dad. I have five awesome brothers and sisters whom we are also close and love them to death. And then I am the last of my grandparents. I'm the last person that they raised in their home. So I have the benefit of having all three of those roles.
And how come you were raised by your grandparents?
Well, my parents had me at a very young age. And by the time I was about five, so my mom had me when she was 16. And by the time I was five, so she was about 20, 21-ish, she developed schizophrenia. And so she was unable to care for me in the ways that she had done before. And so my grandparents took over the responsibility of me. And, I stayed with them, you know, throughout my entire life.
And at least you got a diagnosis.
Yes.
But what were some of the things that afflicted her with that?
Well, you know, with schizophrenia, you have different voices that you hear and you respond. And so it was a time that she just could not physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually take care of me or support, you know, our family. And so, you know, what my grandparents did, they really did out of love for her and love for me, because they could have chosen not to. But they did take me in. And some of the great things that I think that I hold as my own attributes or characteristics, I think that I learned from my grandparents. And, you know, even dealing with my mom's mental health issues, you know, those were opportunities that were challenging, but were also opportunities for me to kind of gird myself up and to continue moving. And I learned so much from my childhood that has helped me in my career, both helped me overall, both in my professional career and my personal life. And I think that, you know, we all have hardships. They just look different, you know, but we're not the first to ever go through them. We won't be the last. And if we are afraid to share our testimony with other people, then that then hinders somebody else from the healing process. Because I think that sometimes when we're challenged with different things, we hold the key to get through that, and we can share that key with someone else. But if we're afraid to say, oh, my mom had schizophrenia, or I was raised by my grandparents, or I was, you know, born to a teenage mom, you know, nobody would have expected a child from a 16-year-old to make it where I've made it. And so I'm a testimony just in itself.
Yeah. Born to a 16-year-old and all the background there, but not everybody hears the same. No matter who's raising us, we don't all hear the same messages. Mm-hmm. What were the messages from your grandparents that stood out to you?
Well, although my grandparents raised me, my dad has always been yep. in my life. He just did not raise me, and that's fine. But he is. My dad and I talk every day. Actually, my grandparents have been passed. But some of the messages that I continue to hear, whether it was from my grandparents or from my dad, is that I can do anything that I put my mind to. It's something that I even teach my daughter, my 5-year-old, that, you know, if you put in the work and the effort, you know, if there's something that you really want to do, there's really nothing that can stop you. And even though you will come against barriers, there's always a way. My dad always said that I never knew what no meant. And I don't know whether that's a personality trait or whether that was something that I learned through my social spheres. But I always looked at no as just not that way, but there's got to be another way. And that's really kind of how I live my life.
So you're growing up in Rochester, graduate from high school where?
At Wilson Magnet High School.
How was school for you growing up?
School was awesome. I loved school. Went to 33 school and then over to 46, Intrum, and then Wilson, and then I, you know, went across the bridge over to U of R, where I received my bachelor's and my first master's.
Now, I'm just pointing out the fact that this year I saw a headline from U of R earlier this week. Not from U of R, about U of R.
Okay.
And obviously, We have a great relationship with U of R here. We hear from their researchers, their scientists, their professors, so many wonderful, smart people. Mm-hmm. But it's hard for some kids to afford to go to school, and U of R is nearly $60,000 a year now.
Yeah.
Wasn't quite $60,000 when you were in school
almost
20 years ago, but it wasn't cheap. And again, I'm not denigrating, I'm just mm-hmm. pointing that out. So how'd you make it work?
Well, I'm still making it work, you know, school loans.
That's sort of what I was asking.
School loans, you know, come every month, and I pay those every month to make sure that, you know, I stay on track. But I also got scholarships throughout my educational career. I have 3 degrees and working on my fourth. I have been blessed in many ways in terms of the graduate assistantships or the scholarships and things of that nature. But, you know, on the other end, I still have to pay a portion of my education. Absolutely.
There are students who you grew up with and who are going to graduate this year mm-hmm. and next year and the year after
yep.
who say, even with help, I can't make it work. I don't want to graduate with loans. It's just not going to work.
Okay.
You know, and What do you say to them? You're still paying off loans. Mm-hmm. You're finding a way to make it work. But what do you say to those students who think, I can't do it?
Well, I think that there's always a way. And there are always scholarships. Sometimes scholarships take work. So you might have to write an essay or you might have to actually research. But there are tons of scholarships out there for everyone. It doesn't matter your gender or your race or your class or anything like that. But I think that sometimes it takes work to get some of the things that you want to get. If they have by chance exhausted all those options, and sometimes you have to do it one class at a time, but I just say don't quit. You know, Evan, one of the things that I live by is that at the end of the day, when I'm taking my last breath, I don't want to ever look or reflect on something and say, I wish I would have, or I wish I could have, because I was either afraid, because I was, you know, anxious about something. You know, sometimes you just got to do something scared, you know? I'm not suggesting that people put themselves at risk, you know, but in terms of like going to school or things like that, you know, sometimes you just have to do it one class at a time.
We're talking to Melanie Silas, who teaches at MCC, local, born and raised. She's Rochester through and through. And her own story is one of overcoming barriers and empowerment. And she's helping organize an event on Friday. We're going to get to details on that in a second. But Elaine on Twitter says, what about kids who don't even know about the options they have?
Well, that's where a school counselor comes into play. There are also community agencies that help with scholarships, with FAFSA and things of that nature. I remember going to community organizations just to help me with the FAFSA process. Counselors are definitely knowledgeable about how to go through that process. So if the kids don't know and the parents don't know, then they have people within school systems that should be able to give those answers. And if they don't know, They should at least be able to refer them to resources that do.
I hope they can. It was a couple weeks ago now that we talked about the SATs are going to be changing. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, when you and I were in school,
everything is changing.
Yeah. They're going back to 1600. It was the 2400. But we talked about what was changing with the SAT, because the most consistent criticism of the SAT is a valid one. Research shows that the wealthier you are, the better you do on the SAT. Mm-hmm. Not every kid. Mm-hmm. I get it. But it favors wealthier students or students from higher socioeconomic status. Here's the part that was really disturbing. For the kids who did exceptionally well on the SAT, for those kids who also came from more poverty, harder backgrounds, et cetera, only about half even went to college. You could have been in the top 10% of the SAT in this country. And if you were in the bottom 10% in socioeconomics, only half are going to go to college. And a lot of them, after they were sort of tracked down and talked about this, said they didn't even really know, you know, that a 15-20 could get you probably a scholarship or get some help. They didn't even know it. Mm-hmm. So what you're talking about, I think, is one of the most important things, which is there's got to be determination to go out there and grab something for yourself, but you got to know it's there.
Absolutely. And I think that's where you come in with the access. You know, I think that if everybody had the same knowledge, or at least had the opportunity to gain the same knowledge, then I think that we could do better. Most times when we know better, we do better, you know?
Well, I couldn't agree more there. So you go to U of R, and let's take us through your journey now.
Okay.
You went to U of R, and you wanted to do what when you were in school?
Well, I thought about a number of different things. I think that my mom's experience really shaped my journey. I knew I wanted to go into psychology, and I actually started
her experience with schizophrenia.
With schizophrenia, her mental illness, mm-hmm. And so I knew that I wanted to go into psychology in some way, shape, or form. And so I did major in psychology, but that became a minor for me, and I fell in love with health studies, which is what I do today. So I am a part of MCC. Through the Health and Physical Education Department, where I teach on things such as grief and loss and emotional well-being and issues in children's health and things of that nature. So that was kind of birthed early on in that last year of high school, going into U of R, dealing with like the health issues, the RAP program, the Rochester AIDS Prevention Project that I mentioned earlier, and into the health field. And so I majored in that, minored in psychology, and then went on into counseling, which kind of, you know, still bridges that desire to do mental health counseling and things of that nature.
How much did studying psychology and related health issues help you understand your own mom?
Sure, if the education part helped me to understand her more, or whether it was just our experiences together. But, you know, obviously the education expanded my horizons in terms of what was going on with her mentally, biologically, you know, chemically, you know, the chemicals in the brain and things of that nature, even just how to deal with it. But, you know, no matter how much knowledge you know, when you're dealing with a relationship with such close proximity, sometimes it's difficult to, you know, divide the knowledge from the experience. She was still my mom, you know, and so I think that experience just, you know, kind of was what it was. Mm-hmm. I can maybe pull myself back and look at other things from, you know, a more objective point of view. But, you know, she, you know, I miss her, you know, dearly. I wish that we had had a relationship that I guess I would deem as a, you know, a normal, quote unquote, mother-daughter relationship. But yeah.
And now as teaching at MCC, you teach students, but you also can counsel. And I'm sure you've met students who you look at them and say, they have so much potential.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you meet students, sometimes I meet young people, I say, if they only knew how good they could be, you know? And I think that's sort of what empowerment can be about, which is helping people understand what they have inside of them. Sometimes I wonder if the biggest obstacle, though, is they don't have that confidence or they have that doubt because, you know, they have grown up either struggling with a home life or not feeling connected in certain ways. How do you approach those issues with students? I mean, everybody's different, but how do you approach that?
Well, students, there are a vast number of students with different, you know, different things, you know, going on. But I think I always try to avail myself to listen. To try to understand, and we have a, and I am a professor. I'm not a, I don't function as a counselor.
No, I understand.
You know, at
but
MCC,
you know,
but there we
teachers
have,
and professors will tell you that you're also teaching life at
absolutely,
times.
Absolutely, absolutely. You're also having those, you know, out of class conversations where they're saying, you know, Professor Silas, I'm not sure if I can do this or do that, and that's where my job comes in to empower. And I guess that's where that word, you know, comes in, where we really, you know, sometimes look at what they're doing and say, okay, well, what are the things that you can do. So let's stop looking at the things that, you know, are bombarding you, and let's look at some of the things that you can do. If I can't get them to that point, then I, you know, would obviously send them upstairs for counseling. But we are you know, all of us are bombarded by things that would hinder our progress in one way or another. But I think that because I am a young, you know, female professor, black professor, that just my presence alone in the classroom is empowering. When someone who looks like me walks into the classroom who is being taught by someone who looks like them.
Yeah. And by the way, you do look young.
I am young.
Hold on. Let me back it up. You look like you could be a student. And you started teaching at 26 at MCC.
At MCC, yeah.
You know, the funny thing was, you and I talked even before the hour, and Shirley Ralph and I talked about the fact that ageism can be another barrier.
Yes.
You know, it can be race, it could be gender, it can be so many issues. Older you get, sometimes the more you're judged incapable of doing certain things unfairly. You had to run into an issue at 26 of being 26 and looking like a young 26.
Absolutely.
How did that impact you?
Well, I mean, whether it was MCC or even with the Rochester City School District, I was a counselor before I was a professor. And so when you're, you know, a counselor at 24, you know, 25, 26, and, you know, a professor at 26, sometimes people look at you as though you haven't had enough experience, or it will even verbalize that or challenge you in that way. And so sometimes you can't take the challenge personal, but you just, you have to sometimes respond with action, you know, with behavior. I may not respond verbally with, you know, you think I can't do it, but I can. I'll just, you know, I'll just show you. You know, my grandmother always said, I can show you better than I can tell you.
The last part before we get to the Friday events coming up, the last part I want to make sure we kind of circle back to is, you said, what would you say your dad said about no? I never
knew that no meant no, or believe that no meant no.
Yeah, I mean,
it just means another way.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And, but what would you say to a student who says, you know what, I've heard the message, you've got to dig down and just find a way. Don't let people tell you no. Keep fighting. Work hard. Try to overcome it. But what if they run into legitimate discrimination or barriers to entry, whether it's work, school, elsewhere? What if they come to you and say, Melanie, you told me, don't put up with no. Don't take no. but now I feel like, you know, I'm hitting a wall here.
I think that's where you have to tap into your community resources, whatever those might be. There are a ton of, you know, advocacy, you know, organizations and things of that nature. And that's where the research comes in. Like, what are your rights? If you think that you're being discriminated against, you first have to know, you know, what the policies are, what are your rights, things of that nature. And then, you know, tap into someone, you know, who knows as well. We're talking a lot about, you know, kind of the bootstrap, you know, mentality, which I'm really hard pressed to say to someone, you know, you can do it all by yourself, because I did not get to where I am, you know, by myself. And I think that you also have to be very aware of your surroundings. Who do you have in your circle? You know, your circle can either lift you up or they can pull you down. And so I have been fortunate enough to have friends who, throughout my years of friendship with them, we've all aspired to do phenomenal things. And so when you see, you know, one or two or a few of your friends doing great things, what it does is it can spark the greatness within you. And I think that my hope, Evan, is that whether people come to the evening of diversity and empowerment with Cheryl Lee Ralph, or if they're in my classroom or what have you, I'm hoping that something that I say, something that I do, will spark the greatness within them so that they can be all that they can be. And that's really what empowerment is. That's really what diversity is, giving people the opportunity to be their very best without the excess barriers or the loopholes or the red tape and all of that stuff. You know, we all want the opportunity to be our best, to live in purpose, purposefully, intentionally, you know, without some of the barriers that other people don't even have to think about having.
Yeah. Connections is online. WXXI News is on social media, on Facebook and Twitter. And Abby says, what an inspiring woman. Nice comment there about Melanie Silas, who's been with us for the hour. Cheryl Lee Ralph, actress and author and singer and performer and all of those things. She joined us and had a chance to have that conversation as well this hour. And let's wrap the hour by making sure people know again the event details for Friday night, Melanie.
Absolutely. So this Friday, starting at 7:30, we have the Evening of Diversity and Empowerment with Cheryl Lee Ralph. We will be at the University of Rochester Alumni and Advancement Center Auditorium, which is located at 300 East River Road. That, again, is this Friday, March 28th, and Cheryl will be with us. You can get your tickets at any Wegmans location, or you can go online at www.mjsproductions.org. Thank you.
Thank you for being here, and thanks to our listeners for a fascinating 2 hours today. Have a nice night on Friday night, and you look like the kind of person, you're a hugger. Well, I'm going to give you a hug.
I am a hugger, actually.
I knew it. I knew it. I'd met you for a minute. I said, I feel like I know you.
So awesome. I'll absolutely give you a hug.
It's been great to meet you.
thanks
for taking the time. And thank you on this Tuesday afternoon on Connections on member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Tomorrow, Wednesday, if you, and you might be holding a coffee right now, if you have a little bit of a caffeine addiction like I do, the author of a book called Caffeinated joins us tomorrow. He traveled the world trying to understand caffeine and his own caffeine addiction. It can be good. It can also kill us. And we're going to look at everything in between. Awesome hour tomorrow on Caffeinated. Join us right back here at noon. I'll see you then.